Hey friends, Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. I am here at Technocracy News and Trends. This is the website of the technocracy expert, Patrick Wood. I had a part one interview with you yesterday, and I know it got kind of cut short at the end. And this is part two. I have gone back and grabbed a little bit of the previous interview from part one. And here we are going to be talking about why Patrick says that he wishes that he had been wrong about AI and technocracy, which is basically a type of governance where you are relying on technology, where there is no room for humans or human thought. And this is very troubling. And I know it's troubling for you as well. So please enjoy part two of my interview with Patrick Wood.
And this whole business of the AI race, where we have to beat China and Russia, and we have to be the leader of all the data centers and stuff around the country. Give me a break. We don't need any of that stuff to survive in this country. We didn't need it before 20 years ago. We don't need it now either. But this is all the hype that's surrounding these technocrats. All of this, and it's not coming from anybody anywhere else, just this technocrat clutch of people in Washington, D.C. And I think somewhere along the way, the politicians, somebody's going to blink, and hopefully a bunch of them will get the idea, we really stepped in here. We need to get rid of these people before they get rid of us.
Do you think that Musk is really going away? Do you think he's going to be behind the scenes? Is he a liability to Trump? What do you make of all the headlines about that?
You know, I know there's conflicting stories. I wouldn't worry about it. Musk is who he is, and he's always going to be in the scene because he's a grandstander. He's always been a grandstander. He knows to put on how to orchestrate a grandstand move. But all these other people in Washington D.C., like Mark Andreessen, he's a nut in my opinion, the technocrat from the old days. People like Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance, who was mentored by Peter Thiel, David Sachs, he's not going anywhere. Howard Lutnick, our Secretary of Commerce, he's not going anywhere. So, you know, forget Musk. Musk is not the issue right now. It's the whole business of the whole technocrat cabal at this point and what they're doing with our government to try to destruct it, if you will, or deconstruct it. And what they're doing with the monetary system as well, because at this point, they're shoving the Federal Reserve out of the picture in order to launch their private system of digital currency. God help us on that one.
Do you have time to talk about that, Patrick? Can we talk about this digital system and and how it works and who's launching it and do we have to participate? So what can you tell us about this digital currency that's coming in?
Well, I know that this is why President Trump appointed David Sachs. He was part of the PayPal mafia going back with Peter Thiel. Sachs was appointed to be the AI czar for one thing, but he's also, alternatively, he was the crypto czar for President Trump. Okay, that's not a position that has to be approved by the Senate. The Senate's supposed to be in charge of our currency, by the way, and our coinage, right? That's what the Constitution says. They don't have a clue at this point what's going on with this. But all of a sudden, now they're having David Sachs in particular is heading all of these committees together design a system for international payments based on crypto and also internal payment systems based on crypto as well. Okay. So what will this look like at this point? Nobody knows. They're playing the cards close to the vest, as they say. And we'll have to wait to see the particulars, but it's going to probably it's going to be based on what's known as a type of crypto called stable coins. Mm-hmm. They won't fluctuate so wildly, for instance, does it like Bitcoin does. But nevertheless, it will require a digital identification for you and me and every person in the world at that point. And it'll also be regulated. So in other words, the money will be programmable as well, so that it could be spent on certain things that they want you to spend it on. This is what's happened in China right now. And, you know, China, their channels at this point, you can't get out of them. If you say something bad to the government, especially, they'll say, well, you can't buy a bus ticket on the high speed express bus, whatever, out of town. You go on the
here one. It is.
there you go.
Yeah. He did this presidential action about this stable coin, and I was researching it a little bit. There is a law coming up now in the Senate, I guess, about this. But you're absolutely right, Patrick. It feeds into the social engineering and the social credit scoring.
Yes.
And this is not something you can get around. It is all trackable. It can be rationed. It can also expire, I suppose, too. Like, some people have gift cards. So you have to use the gift card by a certain time. It expires. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. This is why I say probably in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll have the last opportunity to get away from scientific dictatorship. But if it ever gets completely locked down, there will be no way for us to get rid of it at that point. In other words, if it has control over everything in society and AI is running everything, who do you call? If you don't like what's happening to you, you have to call a data center or the government office, whatever. You're gonna talk to a chat bot, not a real person. And you're explaining the problem, and you can say, well, basically, they can say anything they want, I suppose, but basically shove it. Don't like us, too bad.
Then on the phone, agent, speak to an agent. I mean, we're already experiencing that. They're grooming us for that, basically.
Exactly. So this business of scientific dictatorship is sneaking up on us. This is the infrastructure that they've been building for years. And I say years, I mean years.
Yeah.
The first discussion on AI was held in 1955.
Wow.
This has been brewing for a long time. Now they've just really gained steam in the last 10 years or 15 years when, the exponential growth of programming it sneaks up on you, because eventually if it's exponential, the curve turns vertical at some point, right? So now we see this rapid increase in AI, where it's like doubling every 3.5 months. And if you just kind of think about that, what that means, unless, say, when Trump is out of office, probably AI is going to be 15,000 times more powerful than it was right now, because it's doubling that fast.
So, well, you say that, Patrick, about Trump being out of office. And I just want to remind my viewers that the thing with these presidential actions that, people are applauding, well, they can also be undone easily by the next president, unless they've been gotten the authority of our Congress. And frankly, many of these, and Biden and previous presidents as well, they all try to sign things into law rather than actually going through the proper channel. So my question is, Trump only got a few more years, although he wants to have a third term, but could any of this be undone? Could the train, you're talking about, they don't see the bus coming. Can somebody put the brakes on the bus, or should we just get out of the way?
Well, there's no way to put the brakes on the technocracy at this point, because political action is ineffective against it. They've been railing against the political system for decades. They don't have any respect for the political system or the laws for that matter. But they will use a political system in order to get what they want. That is economic control. Economic control means scientific dictatorship. So the politicians, there's no way that we're going to have a political solution to this, except maybe all of a sudden, you can imagine, I guess, this would be make a great movie. What would happen if all of a sudden all of the people across the aisle realized what was going on and they all went up in flames? Not flames to perish, but they just, their hair caught on fire, you know, they said, oh my gosh, we need to, you know, bond together to get this threat out of our country and run these people into the ocean. That's possible, I guess, but at this point, you can't see that happening.
Is it happening in all countries? Are all the other countries going to follow the United States? Is there any place, like, can you go to Tanzania or something and they're not doing it?
No, I have no place on the planet at this point. It's crept in everywhere. And maybe there's a country that's not as bad, but, you know, nevertheless, it's everywhere at this point. And this is the intention of the global technocrat movement at this point. The evidence of that, how many people in the world got the vaccination?
Right.
You know, 72% of every person on the planet got vaccinated. That tells you that their sights are set on the whole world. Otherwise, who would have thought to go to some of these little villages, whatever, to deliver vaccines to them that they didn't need in the first place, right? But nevertheless, right? Who would have thought that there would have been a market even for it? But they forced it all around the world, using the military by and large, and in many instances, to enforce this policy of making sure that everybody got at least one shot. Well, that, you know, there's at least two different agenda, I think, at that point. One is the payload of the vaccine itself, or the biological payload, the spike protein. That was one issue. But there was another military issue, I do believe, another kind of a payload. We haven't figured out exactly how it's going to play out, but there was some other non-biological payload in these vaccines as well.
Right.
This was conditioning the bodies, the human bodies, to whatever's coming next, to accept the further shots and further biologics and non-biologics into our bodies. This is what, for instance, Klaus Schwab talks about with the fourth industrial revolution, where he said technology is going to go under your skin. That's exactly what he's talking about. So, you know, this is crazy stuff, but the technocrats have teamed up with the transhuman movement, by the way. That's why I wrote my book, The Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism. But they're both on the same page in the sense, and this is actually what Klaus Schwab talked about when he said that there would be a great reset first of the society, the economic system, a great reset of that. But there's also going to be a great reset of humanity, humans 2.0. He called them them. That's what he said it were, humans 2.0, to live in our new society that's on the other side of the great reset. So, you know, there's no way you can take this other than at face value. They wanted the concept is you don't put new wine in old wineskins. No, you have to have new people to live on in your new society, because they blame us. This is really crazy, but they blame us for the trouble in the world, Because we're the Neanderthals, you know. And so we have to be transformed and reformed. We need to have genetic code changes, and we have to have new immune systems, et cetera, et cetera. And the weak will die out, and the stronger, the other ones will survive. And you know, this is so crazy. It's just absolutely insane.
Well, I want to look at this book, Patrick. I've got to read this. Here it is, friends. It's the Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism. And imagine, like Musk and others, growing up, as you say, they grew up in this. He grew up in the technocrat household. This approach is normal. And I'm wondering if some of these, maybe it sounds a little far-fetched, but I'm wondering if some of them already don't have this kind of, technology already implanted, or do you cover that in your book at all, or am I going far afield?
No, I didn't cover it. I would like to. We know this is happening because a lot of people in Silicon Valley, for instance, they're experimenting with things to change their body. They call it body hacking, or human hacking, whatever.
Yeah, the
And
biohacking.
so, yeah, exactly. So we know stuff like this is going on. I wouldn't be concerned necessarily that they're like aliens running around, with slanted eyes or whatever. That's not my point. But you know that these people are experimenting in things that they should not experiment with in the first place. So.
Wow. That is something. Friends, check it out, technocracy.news. Patrick, you'll have to come back, and we'll devote a show to the Starlink. I mean, Stargate. What are they calling it these days with Larry Ellison and the others? Because you said we don't need that. And we can do another deep dive on that. Like, what is
Absolutely.
going? Is that going to be another
Absolutely.
money laundering thing? Is that even going to happen? Was that all smoke and mirrors? And friends, as you are contemplating all of this, it always goes back to like the smallest unit, which is you, your family, your communities, your friends, things that you can do. I remember you called it the Great Panic. I called it the hog washing back in 2020. I got out my notebook and I made a list of everything that in my life that was not going to be affected by the tyranny and the oppression and the, illegitimate emergencies. And I made a whole list of things that I could still do that I was not going to give away and or give up or give over in my freedom. I mean, simple things from, practicing the piano to making a home-cooked meal, calling friends, playing with my animals, getting to bed early, all of these things on a daily basis that really make up our everyday lives. And it might sound superficial or trivial to say, well, Peggy, you're telling me I can fight technocracy by taking a bubble bath. Well, it won't hurt. You've got to do what you can do. And I also believe, as you are demonstrating, Patrick, that increasing your knowledge on these topics, I think, is very powerful. Not that you're going to stay up at night, can't sleep because this is, on your mind, but knowing what's going on so you don't have the wool pulled over you, being able to engage in these conversations with others, walking that line between being informed versus obsessed, where you are spending every waking hour and not going to bed because you're at the computer until 3 or 4 a.m. That's going down the road of obsession. But I find that having conversations like this, it makes me feel more powerful, that I'm not having the wool pulled over my eyes, even though I personally can't flip the switch and stop the technocracy. I can be aware of it. I can make choices in my everyday life that make sense for me. Anything I'm missing there that you want to add to?
No, but I'll tell people, decide what makes you human in the first place.
I love that.
What is your humanity in the first place? They want to mine, they want to strip mine your humanity. That's what they're after. They're after your mind and your humanity, your soul. And that's not yours to give up. Some people will be tricked because of the scam. But you don't have to do that. Your humanness is yours exclusively, right? It's not for you, not for anybody to take away from you, because it's, you're born with your own humanness. This is what we need to get in touch with right now. We really do.
I love that, Patrick. That is a really powerful statement to end on. You know, I'm a person of faith, so prayer and community and fellowship is a part of my life. And that helps me feel connected and not just like spinning off on my own. And, you know, I feel grounded, even if there are people that don't see things exactly eye to eye. And I think that's okay. People are still learning at their pace. They're on their journey. And I think having a curious mind and the willingness to learn more is very important. So thank you so much for this second get together. We definitely will do this again. And I'm going to get your book. I want to read all about the evil twins. Not too close to bedtime, of course. Don't want that to dig.
No.
Interfere with my sleep. But I find power in knowledge. I really do. And when I can also engage my intellectual aspect of what makes me human, that can help balance out the emotional response. That's something that I've always done in my life in general, whether dealing with loss or grief or areas that I want to learn more about. If I crack open a book and I start to learn, then I can get out of that emotional response, which brings us to the fear. So that's what helps me as well. So Patrick, thank you for all of your years of steadfastness, of the contributions that you've done, most recently in the cooties panic of 2020, and moving forward now, as you say, at breakneck pace. And you called it.
Yeah, I did. I'm not proud of that, honestly. I did it. I have called it for so many years, but that doesn't get me the Seaguard, no. You know, it's not, this is, I would rather have been wrong.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I'm so grateful that you are a contemporary and we have you during this time to actually speak about. It's very powerful. And I thank you for your generous time to be here, and we'll look forward to another get together. Friends, you know, you can get the written comments. I do a summary of my videos over at my Substack, peggyhall.substack.com. And then I'll see everybody in an upcoming broadcast.